The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, send those comments to td@kpcg.fm. Well, President Obama continues with his East Asian swing this week, a trip that he hopes will help to improve U.S. relations with nations in Asia. He was in Japan yesterday with Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, and they had a joint press conference, and it was pretty amazing to watch just the way it kicked off with Prime Minister Abe publicly rebuking the president over a recent murder of a woman in Okinawa, and Japanese police have linked the homicide to an American contractor there. And so Prime Minister Abe came out with some strong rebuke. He said he felt profound resentment over this incident, this despicable crime, he called it. And he talked about how that this case has shocked not just the residents in Okinawa, but all the Japanese people throughout the nation. He said, in proceeding with the realignment of the U.S. forces, without truly staying together with the feelings of the people in Okinawa, we will not be able to make progress. And there is a tough and challenging road ahead of us as we seek to regain confidence, which was lost due to the most recent case. So some strong words with President Obama standing right beside him. And of course, he's there to, among other things, visit Hiroshima. And he's getting quite a lot of criticism back home for doing this. He's going to be the first president to visit that city, the first U.S. sitting president to visit that city since it was bombed 71 years ago. I think there have been 10 or 11 presidents since Truman made that decision. And President Obama's the first. He said in that press conference yesterday that he's going to use the opportunity to reflect on how war involves suffering, as he said, and that we've got to do everything we can to prevent suffering, to prevent war. The Prime Minister of Japan, by the way, said that he wholeheartedly welcomes the decision by Mr. Obama to visit Hiroshima. This is what the President had to say yesterday.
Finally, I'm looking forward to the opportunity to visit with some of our American and Japanese military personnel to thank them for their service. And our visit to Hiroshima will honor all those who were lost in World War II and reaffirm our shared vision of a world without nuclear weapons, as well as highlight the extraordinary alliance that we have been able to forge over these many decades.
Sorry about the sound quality there. You can blame the White House for that, I guess. But that's from their YouTube channel. But he's looking forward to this visit to Hiroshima to, as he said there, to honor all those who were lost in World War II and then to reaffirm the shared vision that he has with the leaders of this world, some of them, to build a world without nuclear weapons. The New York Times had a piece today in the print version. I guess it was posted last night. But it says here, Mr. Obama's predecessors had good reasons to avoid Hiroshima. None wanted to be seen by American voters as apologizing for a decision that many historians, even today, believe, on balance, saved lives. It seems like the Times is somewhat surprised that there are still historians, even today, who think that the bomb saved lives, ultimately. We are 71 years on from the bombing of those two Japanese cities. bombings that ended the world's worst ever war, at least there in the Pacific. And here is the Times, no doubt scratching its head. Surely there must be some historians today, some modern historians, that don't actually subscribe to this anymore, that, well, that bomb actually saved lives in the end. It ended a brutal war. In any event, the Times goes on and says here, and there were worries about how such a visit would be viewed in China, South Korea, and other countries in Asia that suffered from the brutal World War II killing machine that was Imperial Japan. That's what Japan was in World War II, a killing machine. A killing machine. It says, but Mr. Obama and his closest aides, notice this, and you've heard some of this, quite a lot about this, in fact, on this program in recent weeks. But Mr. Obama and his closest aides, we know who those people are, the young guns there in the White House, they've become increasingly disdainful of what they view as Washington's conventional wisdom. They're shattering that conventional wisdom. They look upon it with disdain. They're there to fundamentally transform the United States, everything about it. Its foreign policy, certainly at the top of the list. It goes on and lists all these conventional ideas or policies that this administration has chucked out the window. No American president, for example, visiting Cuba in 90 years. The negotiation with Iran over the nuke deal. And then in Vietnam earlier this week, he lifted an embargo on military sales. You just go right down the list. Now he's visiting Hiroshima. The Times says Mr. Obama's made clear that he will not apologize for the bombings of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, but with no election left for himself, he cares far less that any remorse he expresses might be included in what opponents have caricatured as an apology tour of foreign cities. He doesn't care about what the critics are saying anymore. And if he shows any remorse tomorrow, if he says something that sounds like an apology, I mean, you can be sure it'll be carefully worded so that he can at least walk away from it saying, well, it's not really an apology. When everyone will see it as such, certainly the nations over there see it as such. Prime Minister Abe sees it as such. And so no doubt what he says, I mean, he's going to come away and say, well, I'm not really apologizing. Then, of course, if you know the drill, a few months down the road, then the aides will start bragging about this president's unprecedented apology for this dastardly act of cruelty. Right there at the end of World War II. It was interesting in that exchange yesterday, that press conference, the Prime Minister of Japan also pointed out that America is the only nation to have used nuclear weapons. And really, he's just following on what President Obama has said himself. He pointed this out early on in his administration. Almost as if we're the bad guy. America's the bad guy. We're the only nation that's used one. So we've got to take the lead to get rid of them. This goes back to, again, early on in his administration, his speech in Prague, Czechoslovakia, back in April of 2009. Here's what the president said.
And as the only nuclear power to have used a nuclear weapon, the United States has a moral responsibility to act. We cannot succeed in this endeavor alone, but we can lead it. We can start it. So today, I state clearly and with conviction America's commitment to seek the peace and security of a world without nuclear weapons.
That's what he said in Prague in 2009. Again, I mean, to say that at Congress or internally to point that out. It's an obvious point, I suppose, in some respects. But you go around the world on visits to Prague and then now Japan, he basically restates that same thing. And as it happens, Japan is in the midst of a massive military buildup. That's what's so crazy about this. Is as he continues on the apology tour, to use the term that the critics are using, here that part of the world, and we wrote about it on today's website or with the main feature today, my father's article there about China pushing the world toward war. But to just focus on Japan here firstly, you go back 71 years, you go back to the Article 9 that the United States imposed upon Japan's post-war constitution, saying that the Japanese people forever renounce war as a sovereign right of the nation and the threat or use of force as a means of settling international disputes. It says in this article, Article 9 of their own constitution, the one that we imposed upon them, because of its acts in World War II, it was a killing machine. The article says land, sea, and air forces, as well as other war potential, will never be maintained. You think about what the Allied forces said about Germany following World War II. Similar language here. Land, sea, and air forces, as well as other war potential, will never be maintained. But you know, that was 71 years ago, and it's certainly not going to happen again. And so now the United States is encouraging this buildup of Japan's military. And Japan, for its part, is reinterpreting its pacifist constitution. It's taking a much more aggressive military stance. And with all that's happening in the region, well, it's hard to fault them for doing this. As you see, the U.S., as has been the case in the Middle East, U.S. power and strength is in rapid decline. And you have all of these other ascendant powers in Southeast Asia. Last year, we point this out in our book, Russia and China in Prophecy. But last year, Japan released new defense guidelines. And basically, its security policy has been revised only twice since 1978 when it was established. At that time, it basically said that the United States would protect Japan. It relied solely on U.S., power and strength for protection. Well, then in 1997, about 20 years later, it was updated or revised to say that both nations could cooperate regionally. And now, 2015, it basically lifted all restrictions where Japan could now act alone. You see the direction that this is headed in. And even as this is happening, you have the President of the United States on his way to Hiroshima to apologize in some form or fashion. Let me read what George Friedman had to say about Japan and its return to power. It says, this is from his book, The Coming War with Japan. It's by Friedman and Meredith Labard. It says, Japan has already created some of the most advanced weapons in the world and knows how to mass produce them. Japan's emergence as a great military power in the future depends more on its will than its ability. In order to have a world-class military force in a few short years, Japan merely has to decide that it needs one. It just has to make the decision. And really, those decisions are already being made. Switching back to this New York Times piece from today, it says, more broadly, there is unease in South Korea, China, and other Asian countries that Mr. Obama's visit will amount to an endorsement of Prime Minister Shinzo Abe's campaign to move Japan beyond guilt over its militarist past and toward his vision of a normal country, quote unquote, with a larger role in global affairs. Does this sound familiar? Same thing's happening in Germany. This is the New York Times. It says, Mr. Abe has promoted a version of history that plays down Japan's wartime transgressions and has moved to give the military limited powers to fight in foreign conflicts, shedding pacifist constraints in place since World War II. We've been pointing this out for years, for decades, in fact. You could go back to the plain truth from the 1960s and find statements that sound very similar to what the New York Times says today. Today. Those statements are in our booklet. Russia and China in Prophecy. Chapter 6 of that booklet is Japan's place in the future. It has a place in this Asian power. It has a place in this alliance between Russia and China. The first subhead in that chapter, chapter 6, Awakening the Samurai. That's what Washington's doing. That's what this administration is doing. As it shatters that old conventional wisdom. Decades old. Going back to 1945, 1946, and the establishment of Japan's new constitution. Article 9, land, sea, and air forces, as well as other war potential, will never be maintained. Well, now that's since been reinterpreted, and the United States is there encouraging it, encouraging Japan's march toward remilitarizing. It's all in the name of, well, hey, this is something the president's been speaking all over the world. Hey, you've got to shoulder more of the burden. And by the way, this is something that Donald Trump agrees with too. Hey, you've got to shoulder the burden here. America can't keep continuing on stabilizing all these global conflicts. In our booklet, we say it would not be surprising to see the U.S. even encourage Japan to gain nuclear capability under the guise of self-defense. You've already seen statements that really do offer encouragement. Since World War II, it says, Japan has willingly submitted to having America bear the load of maintaining its security by U.S. naval and air presence in the greater Asian region. Meanwhile, Japan has steadily built up one of the largest peacetime navies in the world. But perceptions of U.S. overstretch, coupled with North Korea's development of nuclear weapons capacity and China's increasingly aggressive behavior in the region, are motivating Japan to build its capacity to more independently secure its waters and airspace. And then you have a sitting president over there apologizing for an act that ended this dreadful war in the Pacific and actually saved American lives and Japanese lives, too. And not only that, I mean, you have the prime minister of Japan rebuking the president, saying, look, I mean, if you don't make some changes, I don't think we could go forward in this partnership, in this alliance, like we have. The people of Okinawa are offended. This has outraged the entire nation. It says, this is from our booklet, the West is in decline, Islam is on the rise globally, The European beast power is almost ready to roll. The kings of the East are becoming restless. U.S. influence in and access to the Korean Peninsula, Chinese and Soviet coasts, Asia-Pacific sea lanes, Malaysia, Indonesia, the Philippines, Micronesia, Polynesia, and Papua New Guinea is declining. U.S. influence in all of these regions, in all of these territories, in all of these nations, it's declining. And so where is it leading? From that 1963 Plain Truth article, we cite this in the booklet, it says there's an utter inevitability of the ultimate tie-up between Japan and Red China. The big question, this was written back in 1960 or 1963, the big question is how long will China remain red and survive without a tie-up with Japanese capitalism? Well, as we bring out in the booklet, already, you see, China today is not as red as it used to be. It's ready for a closer union with Japan. Japan's ready for a closer union with China. China's imposing its will there in the South China Sea. And America's on the way out. So you can look for these powers to come together, just as is prophesied. In 1968, the Plain Truth said, despite its many national, religious, and political differences, Asia will ultimately be welded together into a common power block. It will ultimately send its military muscle into the Middle East at the return of Jesus Christ. And then it talks about the prophecy of that 200 million man army there in Revelation 16. That's discussed also in the booklet, Russia and China. In prophecy, that booklet, by the way, has just been newly revised and updated, just printed this year. So if you don't have a copy of it, or you'd like the updated version, you can order a free copy at thetrumpet.com. But look, we're watching for this East Asian alliance, all these alliances to develop. You see it already developing. Economically, and soon it'll be a military alliance, a nuclear weapons alliance. This is what we've got to be watching for. We see these great power blocks emerging, radical Islam in the Middle East, the European Union, or the beast power in Europe, and then this great power block, emerging out of the East, the kings of the East. Even as we see the United States and Britain in rapid decline, this is the new order of global powers. And we see it emerging just as God has prophesied. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma. You can get to the live stream at our websites, thetrumpet.com, or at kpcg.fm. You can also hear these programs, of course, later if you hear them on SoundCloud or get the podcast through iTunes. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. America's status as the world's lone superpower is rapidly fading. Other nations and groups of nations are angling to fill the void. Rising in the East is an emerging power block of tremendous potential in manpower, economic heft, and military might. Its growing presence is intensifying global competition for resources and for geopolitical influence. Where will this trend lead? What does this mean for you? Biblical Prophecy provides a remarkable, penetrating preview of Asia's future. Request a free copy of Russia and China in Prophecy. This book exposes in startling detail what Russia and China are doing and will do, and how they will affect your life. Also, you'll be sent a free one-year subscription to The Trumpet magazine. The Trumpet looks at today's headlines through the clear light of Bible prophecy. The Trumpet will keep you up to date on the continuing rise of the powers in the East by taking a hard look at today's news and comparing it to the prophecies of the Bible. The Trumpet magazine is this world's most informed news magazine. To learn more, request a free copy of Russia and China in Prophecy. So act today and follow the information on your screen. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. In the first segment, we talked there about the press conference yesterday, some of the remarks made by President Obama while in Japan. And he also had something to say about China and just the growing international strains over what China's doing there in the South China Sea. Here's what he had to say.
The tensions between China and Vietnam, or China and the Philippines, or China and other claimants in the South China Sea are not of our making. And we would very much like to see a peaceful resolution of those disputes. What's preventing that from happening is not anything we're doing. We would welcome China and Vietnam having a conversation and being able to resolve those disputes. We're not taking a position on those claims. So it's entirely within China's power to resolve those disputes. Our goal with respect to our own interests in the South China Sea is simply to maintain freedom of navigation, freedom of overflight, and the maintenance of international rules and norms, because we think that benefits everybody, including China.
That's what he had to say yesterday about China's land grab. China's just there building up bases, military bases, creating them. They're in the ocean. They're in the South China Sea. And he says it's in China's power to resolve these disputes. Even as they're engaged in this massive military buildup. Look, our goals here, it's not our fault. We don't have anything to do with it. Our goals is, it's just that we want to have freedom of navigation, overflight, and so on. We want rules and norms. That's all. But these disputes between China and Vietnam, or China and the Philippines, that's between them. Now, you look at, again, the featured article today at thetrumpet.com, my father's latest. This is coming out in the July issue of the print version of the Trumpet. The title there, China is steering the world toward war. That's what's happening. As the United States just steps aside and says, go ahead. Go ahead. My father says, ever since Xi Jinping took over as General Secretary of the Communist Party of China, his administration has been militarizing the South China Sea and working to push the United States out of East Asia. And really, you look at Prime Minister Abe's comments yesterday about Okinawa. That's a not so subtle push for the United States to get out as well. It says, in two island chains, the Paracels and the Spratlys, China is building a series of man-made islands 800 miles from China's shore. 800 miles! And they're just building up military bases. These islands are being installed with anti-aircraft batteries, and fighter jets are stationed on them. But it's entirely within China's power to resolve the territorial disputes. It says these militarized islands now function as forward bases for Beijing to challenge 7 decades of American naval dominance in the Pacific Rim. This should alarm the world. It should alarm the world. But you just heard the president's comments. He's not alarmed at all. He has no part in this. He's washed his hands of this case. Sure, we'd love to see a peaceful resolution to these disputes, but we're not preventing that from happening. And it's entirely in China's power to resolve it. This should be something that alarms the world. But do you hear or see the alarm bells going off? Except for at thetrumpet.com, you don't. Look at what the United States is preoccupied with. Look at the many problems it's facing internally. It says here, this is my father's piece, once World War II started, the Japanese Empire claimed the entire South China Sea and built military bases in some of the very same archipelagos China is militarizing today. It's history repeating. I mean, okay, it's a different nation, you might think. They're going to come together, however. That's what the Bible prophesies. Read all about it in Russia and China in prophecy. But here, the history is repeating itself. The same thing. My father says a Japanese submarine base on the Isle of Itu Aba in the Spratly Islands served as a staging base for Japanese invasions of the Philippines, the Dutch East Indies, now Indonesia, and Malaya, now part of Malaysia. This base was instrumental in Japan's strategy to cut off Allied shipping in the region. He says the Allied victory over Nazi Germany and Imperial Japan in World War II was greatly aided by the fact that they controlled the world's most strategic sea gates, like Panama, Gibraltar, and Singapore. In the decades since, however, China and the European Union have come to possess most of the world's sea gates. I mean, this was one of the main reasons the Allies won. Because of the sea gates. And now we've given up so many of those sea gates. That too is prophesied, Deuteronomy 28 and verse 52. It's amazing, isn't it, how blind the leadership is in the United States and Britain. We see these same scenarios playing out. And what is it leading to? What is it building toward? It's building toward what the Bible prophesies or describes as great tribulation. Great tribulation. That's Matthew 24 and verse 21. For then shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. Nothing like it. You think it was bad in World War II? Some 50, 60 million deaths. And now the President of the United States is over there to make some sort of apology for the one act that finally ended that nightmare, at least there in the Pacific. But what's coming in the years ahead, it's going to be worse. And at that time, Daniel said, shall Michael stand up, the great prince, which stands for the children of your people, and there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation. A time like never before. And you can read in that same chapter, Daniel 12, where this book, these prophecies, are for the latter days. They're for the end time. There's quite a few other scriptures and passages in the Bible that talk about how our nations will just be absolutely devastated by the destruction that's coming. Well, you can, again, go to thetrumpet.com today and read that featured piece by my father. He has a fair bit to say about the tribulation and a prophecy in Ezekiel 4, how that before the military siege, there's to be an economic siege brought against our nations. You can read about this again in Ezekiel chapter 4. Let me just quote finally here from this article again. It says the United States and Britain are going to be left out in the cold as two gigantic trade blocks, Europe and Asia, mesh together and begin calling the shots in world commerce. These nations of Israel are going to be literally besieged economically, frozen out of world trade. And then right toward the end of his piece, he talks about God pleading with Israel. And then he brings up some important history. History that's really not that far ago or not that long ago. He says, in the lead up to World War II, it was easy for America to dismiss Germany's domination over Europe and Japan's domination over Asia as faraway problems that didn't concern them. Yet when war broke out, the whole world was plunged into the worst period of violence it had ever experienced up to that time. It's easy to look at all that's happening. Germany dominating Europe. China dominating the South China Sea. Russia on the march. And think, well, that's faraway problems. Well, hey, you guys need to build up your militaries. Hey, we'll apologize for what we've done. We'll apologize for the empire. We'll apologize for the atomic bomb drop. We'll apologize for colonialism. And fine, you're on your own. Fine, build up your militaries. Fine, build your bombs. I mean, we can't afford to maintain peace any longer anyway. So you can take care of yourselves. That's the Isaiah 3 leadership that we see today in Israel. And only a blind individual would be incapable of seeing where this is leading. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial. We will be right back.
This is KPCG FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. In 1945, the detonation of the atomic bomb in Japan brought an end to World War II with overwhelming force. This new technology ended the worst war this world had ever experienced. But with it came a new, dangerous age. The age of atomic and nuclear energy had arrived, accompanied by weaponry capable of destroying all life on Earth. Man's number one problem now became that of human survival. After signing the Japanese surrender, General MacArthur spoke to America and the world about peace. And with it, he brought a grim warning. He said, "Men since the beginning of time have sought peace. Military alliances, balances of powers, leagues of nations, all in turn failed, leaving the only path to be by way of the crucible of war. The utter destructiveness of war now blots out this alternative. We have had our last chance. If we do not devise some greater and equitable system, our Armageddon will be at our door." We offer you two booklets at no cost or obligation to you. We Have Had Our Last Chance, provides a hard-hitting, concise history lesson about the end of World War II and warning given by General Douglas MacArthur. In The Wonderful World Tomorrow, what it will be like, Herbert W. Armstrong shows you where world evils are leading and how God will bring about peace and plenty. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
Last week we played for you a few clips from President Ronald Reagan's commencement address in 1981. And just hearing that in itself was proof enough of just how very different the United States is today, how very different the thinking is in the White House today. I listened to one even older than that this morning. This was President Eisenhower's first inaugural address back in 1953, and it was amazing. He's out there on the steps of the Capitol and basically telling the audience, look, would you mind if I begin my speech by asking a prayer, by saying a prayer to God? And at the start of it, he said, would you please bow your heads? That's what President Eisenhower said to America, to all those people gathered there at Congress, there at Capitol Hill. Imagine a political leader leading something like that today. Imagine him publicly praying. Imagine the entirety of the gathering bowing their heads in prayer. Well, after the prayer, here is what President Eisenhower went on to say.
In the swift rush of great events, we find ourselves groping to know the full sense and meaning of these times in which we live. In our quest of understanding, we beseech God's guidance. We summon all our knowledge of the past, and we scan all signs of the future. We bring all our wit and all our will to meet the question, how far have we come in man's long pilgrimage from darkness toward the light? Are we nearing the light, a day of freedom and of peace for all mankind? Or are the shadows of another night closing in upon us? Great as are the preoccupations absorbing us at home, concerned as we are with matters that deeply affect our livelihood today and our vision of the future, each of these domestic problems is dwarfed by, and often even created by, this question that involves all humankind. This trial comes at a moment when man's power to achieve good or to inflict evil surpasses the brightest hopes and the sharpest fears of all ages.
Man's capacity for evil or to inflict evil surpasses the brightest hopes. That's a president of the United States. And again, if you listen to the current president's speeches, as we've been doing in recent weeks, you hear a very different take. You hear about a world that's just getting so much better. If we can just forget about history and think about the moment where we are and all of the freedoms, all of the barriers that have been toppled. But you go back to some of these speeches coming out of World War II, and I mean, there was some clear thinking there. There were some sobering warnings coming from President Eisenhower. That was in 1953, that bit that you just heard there. And here he was talking about finding meaning in these times in which we live, and beseeching God for guidance, and asking, are we I mean, are we really coming out of darkness and into the light? Or is night closing in upon us? Well, they thought perhaps a bit more soberly in those first few years after World War II, because they were witnesses, firsthand witnesses, to the evil that man was able to inflict upon fellow man. Let me switch over to Douglas MacArthur. This was his farewell address to Congress in 1951.
Men, since the beginning of time, have sought peace. Various methods through the ages have been attempted to devise an international process to prevent or settle disputes between nations. From the very start, workable methods were found insofar as individual citizens were concerned. But the mechanics of an instrumentality of larger international scope have never been successful. Military alliances, balances of power, leagues of nations, all in turn failed, leaving the only path to be by way of the crucible of war. The utter destructiveness of war now blots out this alternative. We have had our last chance. If we will not devise some greater and more equitable system, Armageddon will be at our door. The problem basically is theological and involves a spiritual recrudescent and improvement of human character that will synchronize with our almost matchless advances in science, art, literature, and all material and cultural developments of the past 2,000 years.
That's Douglas MacArthur from 1951 saying that we've had our last chance. We have a booklet that goes by that very name. We've had our last chance. Armageddon's at the door, he said. The problem is basically theological. There has to be an improvement of human character if we're going to avoid another catastrophe. Now, since that time, look around from 1951 or 1953 to today. Have we seen an improvement in human character? Well, we've reported on this program time and time and time again. Things that, well, that would make these men blush if they were here today. Things that shouldn't even be named among the Gentiles, as Paul said. Notice what President Eisenhower said in 1953, switching back over to his inaugural address.
For this truth must be clear before us. Whatever America hopes to bring to pass in the world must first come to pass in the heart of America.
See, it has to be from the heart. It has to be from the inside out. Here again, the character. I mean, that used to just be stressed over and again, and no one thought anything of it. Everybody expected it to be addressed. Today, you certainly don't hear that coming from the leaders of America and Britain, as we see that rot from within, as we see the cancer just continue to spread. Some sobering warnings there coming from President Eisenhower, coming from Douglas MacArthur. If those quotes sound familiar, or if it seems like you've read them before, it's because they're right there in the first lesson of the Herbert W. Armstrong Bible Correspondence Course. Early on in that lesson, lesson one, it explains, well, where could we begin? We could start in Genesis 1, or we could go to John 1 and verse 1, about in the beginning, there's God and the Word. Or there's another natural starting point, as the lesson brings out. And this is the one that the correspondence course has adopted. That is to begin with the present age that we're living in. To examine why there's such an upset in world conditions. And how that science and technology has produced weapons of mass destruction. And where this is leading. The lesson says we feel the Bible will mean more to you if you fully understand its vital relation to your life today and its direct connection with current world events. In other words, the Bible's relevant to your life today. The prophecies of the Bible, most of them apply to our time today. And yet, as this lesson brings out, there's so much confusion when it comes to the Bible. It gives that example that Mr. Armstrong used to give often about how that if you take a biology textbook and show 10 different instructors at a college or university, they're all going to give you basically the same interpretation of what the meaning is. But you take a Bible to 10 theologians and you're going to get 10 different explanations. Why so much confusion? Why so much disagreement? Well, because we haven't submitted to the laws outlined in Scripture. We haven't submitted to God's family government. We won't let the Bible correct us. 2 Timothy 3 and verse 16, it says, all scriptures given by inspiration of God and is profitable for doctrine, for reproof, for correction, for instruction in righteousness. And verse 17 continues saying that the man of God may be perfect, thoroughly furnished unto all good works. That's what God gave us his word for. It's for doctrine, it's for reproof, it's for correction. But how many people do you know who are willing to be corrected when they're in error? That's what we ask in our lesson. How many are willing to be reproved for the wrong things that they've done? How many are hard at work digging into the Word of God, receiving the correction from God? It's like a spiritual mirror, as we've discussed, even recently. How many are looking into that mirror and then going away determined to improve their character, determined to submit to God's laws, God's authority, with a firm resolve to make changes? To repent toward God. Well, here were some warnings from not that long ago. President Eisenhower, Douglas MacArthur, talking about how if we're going to survive, there better be an improvement in human character. The stakes are just too high this time. The technologies that have been unleashed, it's given us enough weapons of mass destruction to annihilate ourselves. Some 16,000 nuclear weapons have now spread over all the earth. Let's conclude here with what President Eisenhower said. This is again from that first inaugural address on January 20th, 1953.
We can turn rivers in their courses, level mountains to the plains. Ocean and land and sky are avenues for our colossal commerce. Disease diminishes and life lengthens. Yet the promise of this life is imperiled by the very genius that has made it possible. Nations amass wealth, labor sweats to create, and turns out devices to level not only mountains, but also cities. Science seems ready to confer upon us as its final gift the power to erase human life from this planet.
And so what happens when you put together those terrifying weapons of mass destruction with character that is deteriorating and degenerating with each passing day? Worse and worse, Paul said in 2 Timothy 3. Science seems ready to confer upon us as its final gift the power to erase human life from this planet. That's what man has at his disposal. Will he refrain from using those terrifying weapons? The Bible says that he won't. There is, as my father said in that featured article at thetrumpet.com today, there's a lot of bad news ahead. And God is letting it all happen to get people to look to him. But ultimately, the outcome is not just good news, it's spectacular good news. When you think about what it finally does lead to, the return of Christ to this earth. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show as we put the finishing touches on yet another program. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you again tomorrow.